session number 25180 Reel 1.
This is the first reel of a taped interview with Lachlan McTaggart in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 12th of the 6th, 2003, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. Lachlan, can we begin the interview by you telling us your full name and where and when you were born?
My name is Lachlan McTaggart, L-A-C-H-L-A-N McTaggart, and I'm the ninth of a family of 10, born in the 8th of January, 1918. I was born actually in Adelaide, but my family were resident at one of the outback Norwest sheep stations in South Australia called Nonning, and where my family resided there.
Tell us a little bit about growing up in the country on a sheep station.
Well, being a member of a large family, my family, we were, by that time, two of the families had died prematurely because that they with my mother in 1900 was just before 1900 was married, and of course the conveyances then were buggies and horses, and the two children that died were ill with a twisted bowel, etc., but were by the distance involved with horses to go 185 miles into the nearest doctor was really the cause of their demise. But so that there were eight of us in the family, and in big families, on the station with not very much help, although my mother did have some help. But in the depression years, it was it demanded a terrific lot of luxuries were very simple. We lived off the land, as it were, and my mother was very fortunate to have a Chinese gardener who was a pop at the time, and there were Chinese laundrymen that were migrated to Australia in those early days. And of course that was really the basis of her domestic help. But we all in a large family, the older looked after the younger, and we all lived off the land. We milked the cow and we killed the meat and so on, so that it was all very, it brought about a enormous loyalty, as it were, with the people, as I say, with the elders looking after the younger ones and so on, in assistance to their
parents. A strong family bond.
So it brought together, which we've had all our lives, yes, the eight of us that survived.
In relation to living in a country, I get the impression that people who lived in the country actually did it a lot better in many respects when the Depression hit.
Well,
they had food to eat.
Well, yes, I say that, but it was also dependent very, very assistance such as medical assistance, and all those things were all done and carried by our mother and father, so that it was a very menial living, and very, very, we did without.
Given your isolation, as you suggest, what was the connection then to England? Was there a connection felt in the McTaggart family to the old country, as it were?
Well, I think with our grandfather arriving at Australia in the 80s, and he was really only a boy, and he was one of the early pioneers in the northern areas of South Australia. We, with that connection, there was always a back loyalty, as it were, from our Scotch ancestry over there. I think that always carried too. In fact, my father was educated only by his mother and father, because he was nowhere near a school in those days. Bullock wagons and transportation, those things weren't available. And they still carried a very Scotch accent. And of course, all this meant a connection to the homeland of Scotland and England. Yes.
In relation to, you mentioned being born first, well, the last year, or the year that the war ended, First World War, what were the recollections of the First World War that you grew up with? What were you told about the First World War?
Well, I was only a child, of course, but we were very soon in our education and schooling, which is done by governesses and people and educated in those early kindergarten sort of years, right from those early years, the returned men that didn't were lucky enough to be survive were they had remnants of souvenirs, and we played with their gas masks and all the things, and it was all in front of us and really at hand, listening to their stories, and we were influenced very much in that history of as children, right from our education at school. And of course, in those days, every day, and it's still a habit, we stood up for God Save the Queen and sort of thing, and we were born of loyalty, impregnated by our parents, who had their immediate families were in Scotland, of course. Well, they came out from Scotland. So there was followed by education at school, of course. The school was very anxious, very, very history of our British Empire was very, very sort of, if I could say, rather, we thought at times overdone.
I do get the impression that you often talk more about England than you were Australia.
No. I think we're all here making our lives, and there was very little resemblance of climate. Everything, I feel, I don't recall that. I think we were very...
European history, I understand, would have been more focused than Australian.
Yes. Well, there wasn't very much Australian that we told, really. We were brought up in that to look to the mother country and were a part of it, really.
How did you feel personally about yourself and who you were as a young boy growing up in Australia?
I think the simple question to that is that when you're brought up to the immediate surrounds and even leaving school, your tears were as much for leaving your mother and father to go to boarding school as you would someone would look after your pony and your horse and look after your endeared treasures of a schoolboy. And I think we're then earlier, of course, it was followed by a depression in the 30s.
Was there any confusion as to Scottish, Australian for you?
No.
How did you see yourself that way?
Well, as I said earlier, we came of a Scottish family of loyalty, and that was... created a closeness for their relatives still in Scotland and our namesakes, as it were. And I think we felt that, well, we better get on and learn a living where we were, and our future was certainly not going to be in England. We had to make do with our Australian, what was presented to us, and making a living. And of course, by the time we I left school early because of the depression. I was only 15, actually 15 when I left to go back to my station and to go back to my family. And I did have, I was very pleased to leave school. I was not scholastically inclined or academically inclined. I think that was a big mistake now, of course I regret it, but with the depressional years, which were brought about by economics and drought, and our production was very, very loss of just sheer drought conditions, and motor transports were very sort of modest, so we couldn't rush away and get support with feed and from the south and so on. So we had to see our sheep die, and it was all very pressurized, I thought, and we didn't know where the future lay, as it were. But I think it all was part of my family character, that we sort of took our problems as we found them and we survived, put it that way. So I think our concentration was, we left the sort of city doctors and their academics to themselves, and we carried on to make a living out of the land.
What are the early 30s? What are the mid-30s? What interest did you have in relation to what was going on in Europe during the 30s? Changing political situation, the rise of Germany on the scene, Hitler. Do you recall anything that sticks out in relation to that period?
Well, I feel that an answer, the short answer really is to that, is that we were vitally interested. We still regarded as England as our home country, and we were a British subject, and we were, and when Hitler's movements from the Kaiser days, it was all part of our history, well dictated to us from our school days. So we were very vitally involved as to where we'd be. And of course, I remember clearly in my memories where Menzies was the Premier, announced that we were at war, and in his words were to the effect that now it was his melancholy duty that we were at war.
When was it?
British was at war, and therefore we were part of the British Empire. We were very conscious of that.
When was it that you realised as a young man that there was going to be a Second World War, do you think?
I think it was the following, we in Australia were never left any doubt as to what the problems of Hitler Youth, and we, in fact, we were very close to it, really. I remember we were close in this respect to, in realisation, is what you're asking me, was I was at school with a, at school we had German people, like towns in South Australia such as Yidunda, Kapunda, that were all basically immigrants or people from Germany, and some in the towns like Tanunda, they were still speaking in their homes. They would speak German before they spoke Australian. It was all very brought home to us. And we had a visitor by one of the youth fellows that went actually when I was in our, on the station at Nonning Station. When all the family were gathered when the announcement of war came out, he was in the room. And he immediately left to get out of Australia to go back to London and back to Germany. So that there was always an ever presence of news and our education that was, it was followed keenly. And of course, the only thing we thought of was the war consciousness was very clearly imprinted from the returned men of the First World War.
What did he tell you about the situation in Germany?
They were wonderful people. They were going to be saviours of the world. And we thought he was a very arrogant young man. That's put it for the sake of the tape very politely.
Had you had any connection with the military, with Boy Scouts, with the militia?
Oh, at school. In fact, I don't know of a college in Adelaide. I went to Scots College in latter years, but schooling, but because of my Scots base there with my uncle, who didn't have children, the firstborn son, and my father asked him to send one of MacTaggart there. And through those years, we were all very... school cadets was important, it appeared, to our... Well, to me personally, not as our cricket and football, but it was a thing you always did. And, of course, we were... School colleges and schoolings were very... positive about our connections of the old countries in England. So we were never left to be the army and the services of England. Mm. The traditions of England were very imprinted with us at school. Though I'm sure of that, they were very to the fore.
What was the cadets? Compulsory?
I can't really know. I thought it was just a natural thing. We all joined up. All put a uniform and...
What did the cadets actually entail?
We would be instructed by permanent army. There would be an appointed master who would be in the school. Appointed master would be in as they would any... feature of the school activities. He would be appointed to as our captain or command of it. But then we all filled in the ranks and we were had every once a week we would be don our cadet uniforms and we'd go to camps. And, it was quite a part of our I think bringing up that we weren't.
I'm interested in that whole period in relation to young chaps like school being sent into things like cadets.
I think it was voluntary.
Did anyone talk within the cadets about the possibility of another war? Do you recall?
I think it was accepted as a part of our education. That's as strong as I could be with it. As important as our English, as it were, and our maths and so on. It was we joined the cadets and in case that was. Of course, there was always the Australian militia, the permanent army, was always a voluntary army, but it was always there. And I think it was the thing we accepted without thought as children, as young people. When we were boarders and at school, and of course, it was one dimension that we got possibly out of other boring things was to join the cadets. And it was another avenue to our education. I think that was accepted right through the schools. Mm.
Do you recall Chamberlain coming back in 1938, waving a white piece of paper?
No.
Peace in our time.
I think I feel more from his press and news, and of course he at that time was very forward in it. We were all very intent listeners to his what wisdom he may have, and you know, we were all very keen, because we of our age, we were a vulnerable age. If we knew, should there be a war, we'd be, my family, there was another brother and I, the two elder brothers wouldn't be there because they were too old, as it were, but my brother and I next to me, we always knew that we were, at that period, there'd be no question that we'd have to go. Yeah.
How did you feel about that?
We were sort of looking forward to the challenge, I suppose, would be a simple way to put it. And then when we had some months of waiting after enlistment to be called up for training, we had almost the fear of, it sounds stupid, that I know, but it was, had the fear, well, this war might be over before we get there. And then on that, but 5 years later, we're still there. But I'm not so enthusiastic after 5 years.
Well, we'll talk about that. In relation to the general feeling, particularly in the farming community, another war, here we are, September 3rd, 1939, Prime Minister Menzies, and that makes the announcement, we are now at war. How did that strike the farming community? How did that strike you in the bush?
Well, it was one of mixed feelings, I suppose, if I speak personally. We had mixed feelings that we would be inevitable that we would volunteer. We also, after the stories of the after the history of the First World War, our parents were very upset, and in our family, there's my brother and I, the obvious ones. And then we all sort of questioned how could we carry on the stations, or would there be manpower? We all lied, because at that stage I was under manager of a sheep and cattle property, and with my brother, he was the manager. So we both I put myself down as an apprentice or a jackaroo, so that I held no, they couldn't manpower me away because I was going to join up. And he did the same, and he sort of lied to say he was certainly not wanted in the industry. And we did all these things, a white lie, I think, that we were, because we would wanted to be one of those that joined and volunteered. And that was a sort of, I can remember the feeling very clearly. And then, of course, from the personal feeling of my family, they were, my mother and father, upset, which some parents would be. They said, but it was inevitable, so they knew they wouldn't stop us, so they accepted that. So it was all mixed feelings, if I could say so. Mm-hmm. And then when we got to away from the solitude of the cattle and sheep and the outback, where company was always scarce, and we started training, and then we all got to Bowie's Lane in like a bigger, broader boarding school again. And initial training, we had our country friends all from all the different families, and we found things exciting.
Well, Well, I'm interested, you mentioned that people recollected the stories of the First World War, and there was a pretty ghastly story.
Terrible.
Why didn't that deter you from joining, given your situation, given the fact you could be manpower if you wanted?
There was, I think, a sense of loyalty to our country. We weren't, and I think there was a bravado because we would not be seen without putting on a uniform. That was the atmosphere.
The sense of glory, honour?
But I think it was a sense of do the right thing in loyalty to the country.
What about...
That sounds very grandish, but it's a bit of a plague, you know, we would not... There's a sense that we would, that's a chance we had to take, whether we came back or not, that we would be joining. You know, you couldn't, we could have hidden, but we didn't. We wanted to join our friends in support for the country. I think that was the underneath feeling.
To what degree was there a yearning for a sense of adventure?
I believe that was considerable. Yes, that was considerable. That was part of the be with our friends, going away to war, going away and listening. I chose the stories of the last First World War were so terrible in the trenches, and I think it was why I was influential in saying I tried to join the Air Force instead of being a fellow digging in the trenches. I think that made a difference. I was sort of all the services, that was my choice.
I'm interested that you look for the Air Force. Why particularly the Air Force? Well, the Navy, for instance.
I think the Air Force appealed to me to be at least master of your, hopefully you'd be a master of your position. If you'd given an aeroplane with a crew, and of course that was disastrous for me because I went and got myself quickly a private license to help me get in as a pilot, and then I got manpowered straight into as a gunner and sent to England. That broke my heart, but later after serving in the Ruhr and Egypt on 40 Squadron, I came back, and instead of instructing at OTU back in England as I was attached to RAF, I applied for a pilot's course and they granted it to me. So I turned around and did a pilot's course.
Well, let's talk about joining up. What did that involve?
Initially?
Joining the Air Force. What did that involve?
Well, I presented myself at a recruiting centre in Adelaide. I went down and they took all the, do you play cricket, and ask all these football and all these questions they ask, and scholastic, as I've said before, I left school too early, but I did pass my intermediate examinations, that's all. And I thought I was, and I applied for, well, everyone wanted to be a pilot, of course, and then and I was sent to operational training unit as a pilot. And then I was there, they just lined a little, and they wanted screaming for gunners, they're short of them. And they took us and said, every second man, you know, and lined up, bang, and sent us, and gave us a gunnery course and sent us to England straight away. And so that was devastating for me.
When was that? How quickly did
that happen? That was in... I joined up with 40, and then 6th course. Now, just refer if I made a